Excuse me, Excellencies, please take your seats.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Maltese Parliament. On behalf of Mr. Speaker, Dr. Angelo Farrugia, who unfortunately cannot be here today for personal reasons, as Deputy Speaker, I am chairing this session today. So, Excellencies, Madam European Commissioner for Equality, honored members of the National Parliament, members of the European Parliament, friends. I am pleased to preside over this Global Parliament Forum, advancing LGBTIQ equality through leadership and representation at the Chamber of Deputies, Parliament of Malta. This gathering is a joint initiative between the office of Mr. Cyrus Angerer, a Maltese member of the European Parliament, and the House of Representatives, Parliament of Malta. I would also like to salute European Commissioner for Equality, Elena Dalli, who has, through her work as Equality Commissioner, strived to strengthen Europe's commitment to inclusion and equality in all its senses. This forum coincides with the holding of EuropeRight 2023 in Malta, and also the 50th anniversary of the passage of an amendment to the Criminal Code in 1973, the decriminalization of homosexuality or same-sex relations in Malta. In December 1948, the United Nations General Assembly meeting in Paris, France, proclaimed the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which sets out the fundamental rights and freedoms for all peoples to be universally protected by all nations. Its preamble states that the disregard and contempt for human rights have resulted in barbarous acts, tyranny, oppression, that outrage the consciousness of mankind. On the other hand, those peoples and nations that reaffirm their belief and faith in the dignity and worth of the human person and the equal rights of man and woman have determined to promote social progress and better standards in life in a larger freedom. Article 2 states that everyone is entitled to all the rights and freedoms set forth in this declaration, without distinction of any kind, such as race, color, sex, language, religion, political or other opinion, national or social origin, property, birth, or other status. Furthermore, no distinction shall be made on the basis of the political, jurisdictional or international status of the country or territory to which a person belongs, whether it be independent, trust, non-self-governing, or under any other limitation of sovereignty. Article 7 remarks that all persons, I quote, are equal before the law and are entitled without any discrimination to equal protection of the law. They are entitled to equal protection against discrimination in violation of the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights and against any incitement to such discrimination. In view of the persistent calls to protect LGBTIQ people against violations of human rights by several nations, in September 2018, the United Nations Secretary General, Ms. Antonio Guterres, called on the nations to redouble their efforts to protect and to end any form of discrimination against LGBTIQ people. The core legal obligation of states with respect to protecting the human rights of LGBTIQ people include the protection of individuals from homophobic and transphobic violence, the prevention of torture and cruel, inhuman and degrading treatment, the prohibition of discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity, repealing laws criminalizing same-sex relations and transgender people, and safeguarding freedoms of expression, association, and peaceful assembly for LGBTIQ persons. Since 2015, Malta has occupied the top spot of the ILGA European Rainbow Map and Index in respect of the legal and policy situation of LGBTIQ persons in Europe. In respect of LGBTIQ persons, this Parliament undertook the following actions. In 1973, this Parliament approved amendments to the Criminal Code whereby homosexuality or same-sex relations were decriminalized. In 2004, approved legislation making unlawful discriminatory treatment on the basis of sexual orientation. In 2012, introduced legal protection against hate crime and hate speech, introduced on the ground of sexual orientation and gender identity. In 2014, following a private member's bill by Honourable Claudette Buttigieg on behalf of the opposition, this Parliament unanimously amended the Constitution to include sexual orientation and gender identity in the list of characteristics which are protected from discrimination. In 2014, introduced civil unions, including same-sex unions, and their right to adopt children. In 2014, equal treatment and employment amendment regulations, including the ground of gender reassignment for purposes of sick leave and other rights and protections afforded under the Employment and Industrial Relations Act. In 2015, the approval of the Gender Identity, Gender Expression and Sex Characteristics Act. In 2016, this Parliament introduced amendments to the Gender Identity, Gender Expression and Sex Characteristics Act rendering illegal gay conversion. In 2017, approved legislation introducing cohabitation rights for all couples and same-sex marriage. Today, this parliamentary forum, will seek to further discuss the current situation of LGBTIQ community in various countries and propose action for the well-being of the SAT community and the common good of societies. Thank you. Now please allow me, Now please allow me to introduce Mr. Cyrus Engerer, member of the European Parliament and co-organizer of the Global Parliamentary Forum.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's impressive to see all the laws that have changed this country that were introduced over the past 10 years. Such a short period of time, and in only that short period of time, we managed to literally change this country to a more equal and just country for everyone. I must confess that I'm very emotional right now. As a teenager growing up, looking at the democratic institutions of our beautiful country, or even those around the world, I could not see anyone who was like me representing us. And if there were any, they had to keep their silence. But today, walking into Malta's highest institution, together with colleagues, parliamentarians from all across the world who identify as LGBTIQ, and with some others who have done outstanding work for the LGBTIQ community, I couldn't feel but a sense of pride. Because through this event, which I thank this Parliament for co-hosting, together with friends from PGA and the Global Equality Caucus, we're giving hope to thousands of children and teenagers, not only here in Malta, in Europe, but across the world. We're telling them that they are not alone. We are telling them that if they feel they are different, they should not be apologetic about it. We are giving them the courage to embrace their diversity and know that whatever their circumstances, at the moment, they can still succeed in life. They can achieve their dreams. And just like us, they can also become representatives and help in changing the world. Mr. Speaker, pride means a lot to us. Pride means the honoring of the struggle of those who came before us, who had to hide their thoughts, attractions, desires, hopes, and dreams in a world that could never understand them. It is the fight of those courageous enough among us to stand up and speak out, unashamedly demanding equal rights. those who had given me the courage to come out and join them in the fight. And I see some of you up there in the Strangers Gallery, Sandro, Gabby, Ruth, Colette, and so many others who inspired so many of us to actually go in the streets of Malta and reclaim our rights. Equality, Mr. Speaker, that is what we are after. And not just for ourselves. The level of equality that we have reached in Malta over the past 10 years for the LGBTQ community, our community, where we have led a revolution of love. But, Mr. Speaker, to achieve equality, we must all be equal. And if there are people in our society that are still being discriminated, then while we can applaud ourselves for giving our own community equal rights, we would not have reached equality. Because there is no equality until we are all equal. And in this sense, I must mention women and the rights to their bodily autonomy here in Malta. We do not have equality in this country until they have access to safe and legal sexual and reproductive healthcare, the healthcare of their choice. And equality for those among us who are fleeing wars across the globe, fleeing persecution in their countries of origin because of who they are, what they believe in. We do not have equality in our country or Europe until they are equal too. And this is what representation means to us. Having the courage to stand up in decision-making institutions, even when the subject of equality and minorities might not be popular, to bring positive change in people's lives. And this is what we wanted to do with this session here in our parliament today. We are showing the world that, yes, whoever you are, whatever you believe in, whatever you look like, whoever you love, however you identify yourself, you have a place in society, and you also have a place in the highest institution of the country. I conclude, Mr. Speaker, by thanking all those who have made this session possible today. Global Equality Caucus, Parliamentarians for Global Action, Erin, who worked so much for this. From my office, it started back then with Pia McAuliffe, who I know is here, Mireille Farrugia, who then took over and made this possible and worked so hard over the past few months, David from my office as well, and the rest of the team. Thank you for having us in Parliament. We will not shy away from being represented not only here, but all over the world. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cyrus Injury. I call the Honourable Bernard George, Member of Parliament of Seychelles and Executive Board Member of Co-Organising Organisation Global Equality.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I am Bernard George, and I bring you greetings from the Speaker and members of the National Assembly of Seychelles, where I hold office as the Majority Leader, and also from Mrs. Monica Adame, Secretary General of Parliamentarians for Global Action, the organisation which, in her absence, my fellow PGA colleagues and I have the honour to represent here this week, and PGA, as has been said, is one of the co-organisers of these events. Seychelles is the smallest country in Africa, and the National Assembly of Seychelles is one of the smallest in the world. But it is inclusive. 10% of my caucus is made up of members of the LGBTIQ community, who openly live their identities. In 2015-2016, we decriminalised homosexual acts in my country. In 2020, we equated all unions in the sharing of property after the breakdown of relationships, making no difference between gender. Our country is blessed to have a progressive and tolerant outlook, and while there is more to be done to permanently legislate and entrench equal rights for members of the community, including the right to marry and found families, we are on the right track to do so. In this context, I am honoured to belong to Parliamentarians for Global Action, PGA, and along with my other colleague members and Mr. Aaron Lefebvre from PGA headquarters to be here this week for EuroPride Malta. Parliamentarians for Global Action is the largest cross-party membership-based organisation of individual MPs. We are 1,200 from 150 parliaments across the world. And our aim is to contribute to the creation of a rules-based international order which is more equitable, safer, more sustainable, and more democratic. And we do this through campaigns which range across the board from climate change to the protection of oceans to the abolition of the death penalty to the promotion of LGBTQI rights. And in that context, our campaign, the Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity Campaign, SOGI, which I have the honor to chair, is available to assist individual members of Parliament from across the world in their individual and collective fights. You can imagine thus, Mr. Speaker, my personal joy at being able to participate in the events this week in your beautiful country and capital, and this morning, dare I say, in your Parliament. These types of interaction present a unique opportunity to share ideas and expressions. We take away more, much more, than we came with. PGA and we as individual MPs will now, more energized, return to our countries to contribute the fight for equality. On behalf of PGA, my colleagues here and the Secretary General and my home Parliament, I thank you, Mr. Speaker, most sincerely for the opportunity to say these few words this morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I call Mr. Alan Wardle, Director of the Co-Organizing Organization Global Equality Caucus.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Speaker. I'm Alan Wardle. I'm Director of the Global Equality Caucus. We are a network of legislators who support LGBT plus equality. We were formed to create forums where parliamentarians who support LGBT plus people can come together. It's great to see so many of our members here, and those who are not members of ours yet, I hope you can join us at our lunch that we're having after this event today. I'd like to thank the Speaker of the House for this opportunity to speak, and also Cyrus for organising this event. I think it's fantastic to see so many elected representatives from across Europe, but also from around the world here today. The reason that the caucus exists actually is to connect people across members for them to share knowledge, strategies, best practice and so on. We are strictly cross-party, and I believe that actually one of the ways that these issues can be entrenched and actually sustained and made sustainable is for us to be working on a cross-party basis, which can often be challenging. The session today is about advancing through leadership and representation, and actually pick up on the point that Cyrus says. I think representation of LGBT plus people is so vital. To have out parliamentarians to be visible allows people to see themselves in elected office, that elected office is possible for young LGBT plus people, but also leadership as well. And I would like to particularly to pay credit to the vital role of allies in the work that we do, and that is particularly the case we know for people where it is not safe for LGBT plus people to be out in their own countries. Allies have to be the ones who lead the charge in those countries. We see so many people who are doing that here today. Others will be talking of some of the challenges around the world, and some of those have been talked about. For me, I'd like to draw on one which is closer to home to me. I'm from Scotland, and as some of you will know, the Scottish Parliament last year passed a bill which was liberalising gender recognition laws, which was then blocked by the UK Parliament. That is going through a judicial process. But certainly it was a reminder to me that sometimes where we think progress can be happening in many parts of the world, particularly in Western Europe, that sometimes progress isn't always linear. And we also always have to keep pushing forward to try and bring about change for all the people in our communities. Global Equality Caucus exists because we believe that politics and politicians can bring about change. Politicians are the ones, elected representatives, the ones who vote for the laws, they vote for funds, they challenge governments, hold governments to account, and I think their role is absolutely vital. And in a world where politicians, and I speak to someone who's not one, are often unfairly maligned, I would like to extol politics as, in the words of Dwight Eisenhower, as a noble profession. And I would like to pay tribute to all the elected representatives from whatever level of government that you are operating from for the work that you do in pushing for equality for LGBT plus people, often in very challenging environments, often lone voices in parliaments. And I think we exist to be able to create forums like this where people can come together, share best practice, lift your heads above the day-to-day and connect and see what is going on elsewhere in the world. And I congratulate you all, and I wish you all the best and encourage you for your ongoing efforts for equality wherever you may be working, and the Global Equality Caucus stands ready to help and support you in your work. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Walden. I invite now Dr. Elena Dalli, European Commissioner for Equality. You are home. Back to Parliament.
Honourable Deputy Speaker, Honourable Deputy Prime Minister of Belgium, I'm so happy that you managed to make it, even though I know that it was very difficult for you at this moment. So thank you. I really appreciate it. Cyrus, honourable members of Parliament, dear colleagues from the Global Equality Caucus and parliamentarians for Global Action, dear friends, we are just hours away from the highly anticipated EuroPride parade in Valletta. This will bring to a close this 10-day EuroPride Valletta celebration, which brought the LGBTIQ plus community closer to society. In fact, I'll say it now, you will have to excuse me, please, after my speech here, because I have to attend another event. So despite the legal and political progress that was achieved in this country, there have been detractors, as we still see in every country, who wanted to ruin this pride and boldly use it to push back elements of the LGBTIQ community. So no one is safe until all of us are safe. And this is especially true for the most marginal and the most denigrated and all those who are prone to be pushed aside by those who believe that they know and that they are better. Being heterosexual, I appreciate that I have not had to deal with several of the issues that those of you who are LGBTIQ have. However, I do not see myself as an ally, but rather as a member of this community. When I fight for LGBTIQ rights, I take on the motto, "Nothing about us without us," which was popularized by the disability rights movement, and applying it to all the equality sector. I also always make sure that my advisors are diverse and that I listen to the communities that I support. Soon after I became minister, I set up the LGBTIQ Consultative Council that consists of representatives of all LGBTIQ civil society organizations in Malta. Its first chairperson was Cyrus. I also ensured that I had advocates like Joseph and Sylvan in my team who have supported me here in Malta and continue to contribute to the agenda as members of my cabinet today at the European Commission. I knew that if I wanted to progress matters, I also had to support the emergence of community voices, because us politicians are transitory. It is the impact of our work that lives on. Together we worked as a team and discussed things thoroughly to ensure that the legislative proposals that I presented were sound and addressed the needs of the LGBTIQ community. Importantly, I never dropped a proposal that I believed in because it was not popular, because I knew that if I did, Malta would not be where it is today. Instead, I took it on me to explain its need and purpose for however long was necessary. That is what I understand by leadership and representation. During this EuroPride, I met a number of you members of the Global Equality Caucus and parliamentarians for Global Action, either in scheduled meetings or in the lobby on the side of events. And I heard once again your hope that the European Commission does more than it currently does, or does it better. I will not speak to you about competences and difficulties. Instead, I want to work with you to open doors. Therefore, I take it on me to return to Brussels with a resolve to find ways to calibrate our environment to say more yeses and less noes to your requests and expectations, and to use my time to ensure that the rainbow flag flies high the world over. So I look forward to the follow-up. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I will now introduce Her Excellency Petra de Sutter, Deputy Prime Minister of Belgium. Welcome to the Maltese Parliament.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, Mrs. Commissioner Helena. Very good to see you here. Thank you for having this meeting and allowing me also to speak here. Today is on representation, I understand. Well, as you might know, I have often been introduced myself as a role model for the LGBTQI plus community. And I have to admit, sometimes it makes me feel like an imposter. You know the imposter syndrome, right? Why? Because I didn't really do anything to be called a role model. I just exist, and I do what I do. I'm a doctor, I'm a minister, I'm a wife, I'm a daughter, a friend, an employer, a bon vivant, I like life. And of course, I do know why I am referred to as a role model. I accept that task, and sometimes burden, with pleasure. It's an honor, it's a privilege, because it all allows me to make a difference for other people, and it still humbles me every time. It comes with a great responsibility. But actually, I would like to take the opportunity not to talk about myself, but to draw attention to the people who are not always at the forefront, but still make a great difference in the everyday life of a lot of people. And I have had the pleasure of meeting some of these people over the past few years. I just give some examples. I think, for example, of the volunteers of the Pride Info Center in Belgrade. I was there last year at the Europe Pride. They had suffered attacks on their office. And as you know, the Serbian government initially had prohibited the Europe Pride parade last year. They remained present. They remained there to provide a second home for LGBTQI plus Serbians. A second example, I want to think of Ahmad Jude. Maybe you know him, maybe you don't. But he's a ballet dancer who grew up as a stateless refugee. And he always refused to stop dancing against all norms. And now he's a great role model to many LGBTQI plus refugees. And thirdly, I have met Hungarian young people recently. They visited my office and they told me how they stand their ground in their country, despite, and I'm sure you know, the anti-LGBTQI plus laws that have been implemented in Hungary. Actually, these are my role models. It's their bravery that inspires me every day again. It's their actions that are changing lives, and their commitment that gives me energy to keep fighting for LGBTQ rights myself. If it wasn't for people like them, I think we would not be standing here today as politicians. But we must also be aware, I think, that no achievement, of course, is forever, and we must continue to fight for equal rights. Because once again, we see that our rights and our security are under pressure. When representation increases, some backlash occurs as well. And we know that some political groups are taking advantage of this. They are intimidated by the fact that we are taking up the space that we deserve. They like it better when we are invisible, when we are silent. And that may sound terrifying, makes you feel uncomfortable or insecure or scared, but if I can give one message to whoever needs to hear it out there, maybe not you in this room, but people watching this or hearing this, you are not alone, and you will never be alone in this struggle. You can count on all of us, And on this ballet dancer, on the Serbian volunteers and on the Hungarian young people that I've met, and many, many others, we've always found strength in our togetherness. And as long as we keep on doing that, we will keep on winning the hearts and the minds of people. So I all wish you an exuberant Euro Pride. I cannot be there myself, unfortunately, because of my agenda in Belgium. But thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Deputy Prime Minister of Belgium. I invite now Mr. Marc Angel, Vice President of the European Parliament.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Actually, I've never said it out loud, but today it's Pride Day. So, yes, I am very proud to be the first gay Vice President of the European Parliament. At least the first openly gay Vice President. But I'm also very proud to be the co-chair, together with Kim van Sparentak, of the LGBTI Intergroup in the European Parliament, a fantastic group of 157 members who fight for equality, and many members of us are here today. We are champions of equality, we are leaders of equality, but we do much more other different things. For example, the beautiful Kim here next to me, she's an expert in housing. We had reports on affordable housing, on homelessness, and she puts the angle of equality into these policies, and this is very, very important. Then our great ally, Kira Peter Hansen, who is, by the way, the youngest MEP in our parliament, and also this is diversity, and also that is a role model. And Kira has great leadership. She was the rapporteur of a piece of legislation that Helena brought out, the Pay Transparency Directive, and here we made sure that this Pay Transparency Directive for equal pay between men and women for equal work counts for everybody, because men and women, we consider them in all their diversity. We used the European Court of Justice case law. We said that the concept of men and women have evolved over the last 70 years. And here we go. Now this piece of legislation is there for everybody, for men and women in all their diversity, for non-binaries, for everything. And we brought the intersectional aspect also for the first time into a piece of legislation. So this is wonderful. And Cyrus, who is also a great champion of equality, who is a specialist in rule of law and also in health policy, he never forgets to put this gender equality aspect into these policies. And this is what I love so much about our work of the intergroup, which is really cross-party. Four political groups are in, and we forget party politics, and we fight for the cause. When I see this room, it's wonderful, and how different it is. We celebrated this year 70 years of the European Union, and when you see these pictures of the founding fathers, unfortunately there was no founding mothers at that time, it's all men my age with a belly, and you say, this is not diverse, even though they created a great project. But now it's us to make this project more diverse. And the more diverse we are, the more equal our societies will be, and the better it will be for our citizens. And this is something which I think is of utmost importance. The European Union organized during 2 years a fantastic conference called the Conference on the Future of Europe, where we discussed 800 citizens together with civil society, with social partners, with members of national parliaments and members of the European Parliament. We discussed about the future of Europe, and we came out with 49 recommendations and 250 measures. The Commission is already translating a lot of these recommendations into legislation or policy changes, but for a little piece of these recommendations we need to have treaty change, and I'm so happy that our committee of AFCO Committee of Constitutional Affairs just working on a report to prepare a convention to change the treaty changes. And we are not forgetting one thing in that, also change the grounds of discrimination in our articles, because we have a lot of good grounds of discrimination. Sexual orientation is included, but gender identity and sex characteristics are not included, and I think we need to enlarge these grounds of discrimination. So I really hope that the Council will hear us, the European Council, and that they will accept that we will have a convent, because changing the treaties just on certain aspects can make our society more equal, can make it a better society. Having said that, we will continue to fight for equality over the next years, and count on us, and come to us if you have ideas. And civil society is for us politicians not an enemy, but they are our most precious ally. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice President of the European Parliament. Ms. Kim van Sparentak, Member of the European Parliament, the floor is yours. You can switch off, please, the Vice President's mic as well. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. I am the co-president of the LGBTI Intergroup, and I'm very proud to be here today together with my beautiful co-president. My name is Kim van Sparentak. My pronouns are she, her. I'm a Dutch member of the European Parliament for the Greens EFA, and I'm an out and proud lesbian. And I'm very aware that I am very comfortable in saying that here, because I don't have to fear my career, I don't have to fear losing my friends, my family, I don't have to fear for violence, or even my life. I stand here with a great amount of privilege. And for me, it shows that progress made in law always leads to progress in society. Because I was 11 years old when equal marriage became reality in my home country, the Netherlands. And I am sure that the reaction from my mother when I came out to her, which was, "Will you still get married in a dress?" is a direct result from that fact. She knew that my life wouldn't be as easy as if I was straight. But she did see a beautiful future ahead of me. And that's also why I'm so proud to work with the LGBTI Intergroup in the European Parliament. We are 157 members. We are not all queer, I wish. But when we got equal marriage in my home country, the Netherlands, there was also not a majority of queers in the parliament. I wish. But everyone stood together and realized that we are all human beings, and all human beings deserve equal rights. And that's why I'm always so happy to see with how many we are here, and that we are together with people from the community and allies. We need each other. Minority rights will never become equal rights for everyone if we don't stand up together to protect them. And right now, I think it is even more important to stress that, because there are a lot of forces who are working tirelessly, day in, day out, to make sure that there's not a majority anymore of people who are in favor of human rights. And we have to stick together. We have to stand together. In the upcoming European elections, it might be the case that my community will be one of the biggest targets from the far right, and they will try to use us as a political tool to try to win elections with. And I'm counting on all of you, when it becomes hard politically, and when it becomes tough to say that you stand fully for our community, please continue to do so. Because if the people who were like bullied and crushed when they were fighting for equal marriage in my country didn't stick together and didn't stand up, we wouldn't have been where we are today. And I want to thank you all for being here today, and I count on you with the upcoming elections. Thank you.
Thank you very much. May I now ask the Honourable Maja Moracin, Member of the Assembly of the Republic of North Macedonia. The floor is yours.
Okay. Thank you. Honorable members of European Parliament and other parliaments, I'm Maja Moracinin. I'm a member of the Parliament of North Macedonia, and it's a great pleasure for me being here today in the Parliament of Malta, where we can share our different experiences regarding LGBTI issues and human rights issues in general. I'm a chair of the LGBT group in the Macedonian Parliament and member of the Steering Committee of Global Equality Caucus. And I've been involved in all this issue on human rights and minority rights and LGBTI rights since the days when I was not in the Parliament, because I was an activist fighting for human rights in North Macedonia. And I really think that it's very important having these caucuses where we can share different experiences, and this strengthen our fight for human rights and fight for the rights of the LGBTI people. This is even more important nowadays, where we see the backlash against LGBTI rights, but also women's rights in all over the Europe. It's the case also in North Macedonia. We are seeing the rising of the anti-gender movements. So they're really a big threat on not only on human rights, LGBTI rights, especially transgender people rights, but also they're a threat for our democracies. So what is needed is really to get together and to keep the good fight together in the future. Thank you very much.
I call now the Honourable Fox Odoi Oyelowo, Member of the Parliament of the Republic of Uganda.
Thank you very much, Honourable Speaker. Honourable Speaker and the people of Malta, we thank you for welcoming us to this beautiful country and to your beautiful Parliament. I am rising to talk after very eloquent speakers. And in trial advocacy, I would simply say I have nothing useful to add. And I would resume my seat immediately thereafter. This morning, however, I will attempt to summarize in one or two sentences. First, I have listened and I'm emboldened. We have learned. We have learned very many things from you over the last couple of days. Secondly, I am instructed by history. Throughout the checkered history of human civilization, there has been challenges. We had the challenge of slave trade, the challenges of fascism, the challenges of terrorism. Human civilization fought and defeated all those challenges. And you know why? There was collective global action. Collective global revulsion. That's what I call you to do. I call upon all of you to collectively express revulsion against abusers of human rights. And do so loudly, do so without shame, do so on a daily basis. I thank you.
Thank you. You are making my life very comfortable here, keeping to your designated time frame. So, I call now the Senator of the Republic of Ireland, Honourable Fintan Warfield.
Grimalgut, Deputy Speaker. Is the intercondeshe of Lerato's quarantine, Usal, showing you Mavila Bukaslev. Friends, it's a great honour to speak here in the Maltese Parliament on the occasion of Europride. Malta and Ireland share so many similarities as two island nations who have struggled for independence and whose experiences inform our shared commitment to international peace and our shared neutrality in an increasingly militarised world. I'm mindful in political chambers like these of the powerful change that can come from quiet conversations between LGBT politicians and their fellow political colleagues. That being open about our sexual orientation or gender identity can and has helped to change the voting behaviours and views of our political colleagues and those around us. Personal stories have been such an incredible force for advancing social change in Ireland, for marriage equality, for abortion rights. And there are people talking all of the time, quietly, loudly, in rooms, on streets, on television, online, and on the radio. and language and words hold all of us together. And I've been reflecting on personal stories as a force for good since hearing Artemis Akbari talk at the conference this week about his initiative, Radio Free Afghanistan, which broadcasts the personal stories of LGBT Afghans. In Ireland's experience of social progress over 30 years, these personal stories and quiet conversations are the seeds of change. And I was so deeply struck and inspired by my brothers from Syria, Morocco, Lebanon and Afghanistan at the Human Rights Conference this week. As Europeans, we have a duty not only to listen, but to really hear our brothers and sisters from around the world and to relay their stories in rooms and to relay their demands to those who hold power around the world. And so I just want to salute, I suppose, the bravery of those in our community who struggle for freedom around the world, and to say that we do not accept the violence and the hate that they endure, and that we will overcome with love and with compassion. Good moment.
Thank you very much. I will now call a deputy speaker from Canada, the Honourable Lisa Lachance.
Thank you so much, Mr. Speaker. Good morning. Bonjour. Kwe. It is such a pleasure to be together today. I'm Lisa Lachance, member of the Legislative Assembly of Nova Scotia and the first genderqueer deputy speaker. I'm from Jibuktuk, which means Great Harbour, in Mi'kma'ki, or known by its colonial name, Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. And I wish to start by acknowledging that I live and work in the ancestral and unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people. In Mi'kma'ki, starting in the 1750s, the peace and friendship treaties were signed to guide how we all live together, and we are all treaty people in Mi'kma'ki. Nova Scotia is also the birthplace of African culture in Canada. African Nova Scotians were forcibly resettled to our province, starting with the earliest colonizers, and since that time have contributed to the vibrant development of Nova Scotia, despite ongoing racism and marginalization. I share these historical frameworks to acknowledge how colonization and its legacies have created division, inequity, and exclusion since Nova Scotia and Canada's earliest days. Colonization also led to the denigration of the multitude of ways that First Nations across Canada considered gender identity, sexual orientation, and sex characteristics. We now use the term Two-Spirit, or 2S, at the beginning of our Canadian acronym, to acknowledge the important part of the community. But even this one term represents a melting together of many traditional understandings. Much is still lost. Like countries around the world, we continue on a path of seeking truth, reconciliation, and decolonization. And our liberation is bound with the liberation of all. Canada was one of the earliest countries to extend many forms of formal legal equality to the 2S LGBTQI plus community. When my partner Heather and I went to work after university with the federal government, we could have access to shared benefits. We were one of the first same-sex couples to legally marry in Canada, and thus the world, and soon after we adopted our children, Jason and Kira. I don't share this as some kind of queer equality flex, but rather to outline that these formal structures exist, yet the battle for substantive equality and safety continues each day in Canada. We know we are facing a global threat to 2S LGBTQI plus equality, and our opponents are well-resourced, connected, and organized. In Canada, there is a nationwide anti-gender protest planned for this coming week. There's been more than a 50% increase year-over-year in hate crimes reported in Canada on the basis of sexual orientation. We now need to guard against backlash, create respectful and inclusive communities, and accelerate equitable access to services. We need to fight for trans and queer youth. I worry every day about the safety of trans and queer youth in my city. Policies are in place, there's curriculum, yet I know that trans kids at my children's high school are not safe to use the washroom that aligns with their gender identity. And in Halifax, 34% of the under 24-year-olds who identify as homeless also identify as 2SLGBTQI+. At the same time, we face enormous pressure to roll back education policies that protect young people. We don't have adequate access to gender-affirming care. And, of course, there's so much else. We don't have adequate protections and rights for intersex people in Canada. 2S LGBTQI plus seniors are often forced to go back in the closet as they seek assisted living. And we support LGBTQ plus refugees in Canada, but there's an ongoing need to ensure services, housing, and integration. These measures are more important than ever. As we return to our home communities, I hope that we can take solace and strength from this spirit of global solidarity. Thank you. Merci. We all look.
Grazie. I call now the Honourable Fatim Diarra, Member of the Parliament of Finland.
Thank you so much, Mr. Deputy Speaker, and other honourable guests, women, men and others. I would like to first of all congratulate Malta on this fantastic legislation that you have done on LGBTQ plus rights. And coming from Finland, it's good that other countries are doing things, since sometimes we believe that we are the best student in the class. So it's good that someone shows us that no, we are not, and we have a job to do.
Thank you.
So I thank you a lot on that. It's good that someone kind of shows us the way in this. I'm really, really happy to be here. And I would like to say that as a young black woman coming from an extremely white country, I understand something about representation. So it is a fantastic topic to have for this event. But at the same time, I think we need to be proud but extremely critical towards what we're saying and who we're actually representing. I had the honor and the joy of meeting different kind of activists yesterday, and we had long discussions about sexual and reproductive rights and about the rights of immigrants from LGBTQI communities here in Malta and in other places of Europe. And the fact is that we are not treating everyone in the community in the same way. And I think we should focus more on race, we should focus more on class, we should be critical towards who are making the decisions in the room and who we are actually representing. If it is just a bunch of educated white or even black educated, like myself, privileged people making decisions, who are we truly representing and about who are we truly actually even discussing? Thank you. And also at the same time, I think we have to question how many women are in the room, how many women actually sit in this room when decisions are made, for who are we actually really speaking? Human rights are not a buffet table where you can pick and choose the nice little things you want. It is a set menu, and you have to take it all, or you're not really taking it. And so, with these words, I would like to thank you for inviting me. I have enjoyed the sun, I have enjoyed the people, and I will enjoy the march. So thank you so much. It's truly an honor to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. So I hope that you will come back again to our island.
I will.
Thank you. I understand that the next speaker is from Member of the Parliament of Iceland, Fredrik Sevestal.
Well, actually, I'm from Sweden.
Okay. Excuse
me. The Icelandic colleague isn't here, so I'm stepping in, and I'm the Deputy Speaker of the Parliament for Region Stockholm in Sweden and alternate member of the National Parliament for the Conservative Party or the Moderate Party. So I'm not going to say brilliant things about Iceland. I've been there. It's a wonderful country. But I'm not
excuse me for
their
that.
Policies. So I'm going to tell you instead that Sweden has for a long time been at the forefront for the enhancing of LGBT plus rights, both at home and across the world. This is and should remain our commitment, no matter if we have a government who's centre-left or a government who's centre-right. I think these are values that unite our parties in our country. And therefore, the current centre-right government is moving forward with new reforms to strengthen the LGBT plus community. There are now also, we are reaching out as a party toward the opposition to move forward also on trans rights, where it is more complicated to get a majority. But we will get there, and we will not be, we are the last of the Nordic countries to move on self-determination for trans people, but we are moving now. Finland beat us last year. Norway and Denmark, yeah, that was way back. But LGBT plus issues aren't just national issues. They are also local and regional. And we, when we work on the local and regional level, don't always have to wait for the parliament or for the government to act. I believe there are many, many cases and many areas where we can show that we can go ahead of them. In Sweden, regions are responsible for healthcare, and that is an issue and an area where we can move faster than the national level if you have the will to do so. And I believe that we have, and I believe that we've shown that, and at least in the region of Stockholm, where we for years moved ahead of the government when it came to different issues, such as access to healthcare for young people, young LGBT people, and trans people. And also some of the vaccination issues regarding HPV, for instance, where we moved ahead. I think that is an inspiration for others to also say that on the local and regional level, you can move faster if you want to. Now, together, I know that everyone in this room believes that and knows the truth that LGBT plus rights are human rights. There are no exceptions. There are no ifs and no buts. These are Swedish values. These are European values. These are global values. So let's keep working to make this true for everyone, everywhere. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. I call now the Honourable Adam Price, member of the National Assembly of Wales.
Diolch yn fawr, Dirprwy Llywydd, am yr fraint o fod yma gyda chi yn Melita heddiw. It's a real honour here to be representing the National Parliament of my own country, Cymru, Wales, in this Parliament here in your capital. I will be mindful today as I march of my own first march for LGBTQ plus rights in the capital of Wales 35 years ago. We marched, it was the first march in the history of my country. I wasn't out at the time, I was a 19-year-old. We marched not to cheers, not to jeers, but to looks of incomprehension and disbelief on the streets of Cardiff. The age of consent then was 21, so my first few fumbling attempts to act on my same-sex desire were criminal acts. Here, 35 years later, I stand as not as a lawbreaker, Deputy Speaker, now as a lawmaker. I'm civil partnered. I have two wonderful children, things that then I couldn't even begin to dream of. I'm an out and proud member of our Parliament, and one of the things I am most proud of is that last year my party as an opposition party reached across the aisle to the governing party in my country and together signed up to a LGBTQ plus action plan which aims to knock Malta off the top spot, Mr. Deputy Speaker. But it comes from a...
That's a hard job to do.
It comes from a place of love. But in being optimistic about the future that we can create, we have to be realistic about the present that we are living through. Because even as we set this goal for ourselves as a country, as Alan said, if we are seeking as well, like Scotland, in Wales, to have human dignity for our trans community through self-identification, as you've done here in Malta and many other countries across Europe, but we know that we will be blocked as well by a Westminster government that will oppose us. And at the same time, the British Labour Party has actually condemned the Scottish Act as well, they say, as an act of opportunism. And in different ways, in all of our different contexts, we are facing rising intolerance. Democracy is in crisis. Xenophobia is on the rise. And though it's right today that we march in a spirit of celebration of progress where we have made progress, because we need to gain hope from that success, we must be conscious of the fragility of the gains that we have made as well. We'll be marching, Deputy Speaker, to the heartbeat of love and hope for a better future, but we are also marching towards the sound of gunfire, of a war that has never ended, has never ended in any of our societies, a war of intolerance. Hate is getting organized again. And I will be mindful, we often use the term intersectionality, don't we? Martin Luther King possibly said it better. He said most things better, didn't he? Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. If nobody will be free, nobody will be free unless everyone is free. We win the fight for equality locally, don't we? But we cannot secure it unless we win it globally. That's the message, isn't it, of the rainbow flag. Yes, it's a flag of diversity, but it also reminds us that we are woven from the same single thread, unity in that diversity. And it is true for us globally. That is why we are coming together today in international solidarity. But it's also true, as Fatim said, within our own societies. If we tolerate intolerance against the migrant, against the poor and the marginalized, then in the LGBT plus communities, then we should not surprise when the guns of those of that intolerance is then trained upon us. And representation is absolutely key. Without diverse representation, all of our communities representing around the table, if you're not at the table, then you will be on the menu, as someone once said. So when we march together. When we win together or not at all.
Thank you very much. We call now Mr. Santiago José Rivero Cruz, member of the Assembly of Madrid, Spain.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker, Minister, spokesperson, legislator and parliamentarians. First of all, I want to thank the organization for inviting me to this forum. As you know, Spain is a country that has been characterized in the last 40 years, it's my first time in English, by the advance of our rights. But the road has been complicated and full of obstacles. During the dictatorship, many LGBT people were tortured, murdered, disappeared, or sent to the concentration camps. Homosexuality was not decriminalized in Spain until 1978. And we also must not forget about the mass difficult times of the AIDS pandemic. In those years, queer activists suffered a lot due to the loss of many colleagues. One of the greatest successes of the LGBT movement in Spain was, without a doubt, that Pedro Cerolo convinced President Zapatero of the need to approve equal marriage in 2005. Its approval sparked a reactionary wave led by the Catholic Church and the Conservative Party. Bischoff and Conservative leader demonstrated to try to prevent LGBT people from having rights. However, once it came into force, they were the first to make use of the right to marry. President Zapatero also passed for the necessary reforms so in 2007 trans people could gain the right to legal sex change. For all of this, I want to highlight the figure of the socialist president José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero, one of our greatest allies inside and outside Spain. Despite these bans, we also live in dark time in Spain today. After the local and regional election in spring, there are thousands of chaos in which conservatives have made an alliance with the homophobic extreme right in order to arrive in government in our times, in our towns and regions. Day-to-day examples of support, such as LGBT areas, the rainbow benches or the flags from the balconies of the town halls have disappeared wherever they govern. If they manage to govern at a national level in Spain, they will repeal the trans law approved this year, as they have already threatened. By doing this, trans people will once again be considered as sick under the law. In my region, in Madrid, in the capital of Spain, its president, Isabel Díaz Ayuso, for the Conservative Party, has already announced that she will do it. That is why I want to appeal to European Conservative and Liberals colleagues to stop their alliance with the far right and join us in defending our most fundamental rights. In spite of this, our president, Pedro Sánchez, has been firm in defending our rights, and our government is helping to ensure that they are also respected in other countries. Unfortunately, there are still countries where the LGBTQ plus people we are murdered, imprisoned, or we do not have any type of right or protection. Therefore, it's very important to call on international institutions an organization to be specialized on countries that do not respect us. The defense of LGBT rights must be a basic principle in the international relationship of any country that wants to be considered itself a democracy. It is up to us to put our face and body so that many behind us have more freedoms and rights. Although the path is sometimes hard and dangerous, we will never stop fighting, only united among us and united worldwide despite our different ideas or political tradition, will be able to turn this planet into a safe place for LGBT people. Let's continue the fight. I wish you a happy Euro Pride, and I promise that the next time my English is better. Thank you so much.
Your English was very good, don't worry. I call now the Honourable Thomas Raskevicius, from member of the Lithuanian Parliament. My Lithuanian is not that good.
It will improve. Fellow legislators, good morning. In my everyday life as a politician, there are not that many plenaries or meetings where I would be exclusively surrounded by my allies and supporters. And today is very different. And you know what? It feels amazing. We, as legislators, we dedicate a lot of time, effort, and our personal struggle for advancing or advocating for human rights. We are united by the simple but yet very powerful idea. Every human is unique and capable of loving and being loved. We very often encounter opposition and sometimes even hostility. And yet we are still here, true to ourselves and true to the ideas that we stand for. I would really like us to stop here for a second and appreciate the path that we have already traveled. I know that many of you have become politicians not regardless of being LGBTIQ+, but because of being LGBTIQ+. Many of us, at some point of our professional path, felt that the political establishment is not willing to hear and to act upon the struggles of LGBTIQ+ people in our jurisdictions. So we have decided to become politicians ourselves. And sometimes we did not even grasp the gravity and importance of this bold step. I have followed a very similar path myself. Before entering the big politics, I have been an LGBTIQ plus activist for almost a decade. I was dreaming that one day my country would work for LGBTIQ plus people and would stop treating us as second-class citizens. So I asked for their vote, and I got elected as a member of the parliament. Some of you might relate to the difficulty of transferring between activism and politics. One day, as an activist, you have a full right to criticize and demand from the government. The next day, already as a politician, you have a part of the government yourself, and you are expected to deliver the results, now and quick. Being a politician is a great privilege, but it bears its own cost. Today I want to applaud all of your courage, dedication, and resilience. You are the driving force behind the change in your own community, in your own country, in your own continent. Please, keep going on and never doubt yourself. Also, please support Ukraine, fighting for democracy and international order in Europe. And you know what? For once, good guys have to win. Thank you very much, and I appreciate your presence.
Thank you very much. I call now the Honorary Unity Job, member of the National Assembly of Botswana. The floor is yours.
Mr. Speaker, fellow members of Parliament, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to contribute to this important debate. As a lawyer, a former judge, a former member of the executive in such important portfolios as education and foreign affairs, as a member of Parliament today, I own the responsibilities and obligations of those offices. I own the failures, I own the successes. Coming from a country that had to be sued to allow for the registration of the first LGBTQ organization in the country, a country that only recently decriminalized same-sex intimacy, I am both frustrated and optimistic. I'm frustrated that the path to equality seems to be so slow, so expensive, so dangerous, and so often lonely for those who walk it. Optimistic because I do see that the road is there. It is possible. Being in this room with fellow members of Parliament from across Europe and beyond, I'm energized and I'm full of hope. The Malta story of from zero to hero is inspirational. It is a story that shows that with activism, with allies, with political will, the war can be won. It is all I say, I've been saying in the last 3 days, it is about leadership. It is the person or the people who sit at the head of the table who determine the culture of that table. It is. If my president will stand up tomorrow, if your president will stand up tomorrow, if your president will stand up tomorrow, if your leadership will stand up tomorrow and say, enough is enough, the dial will be switched down so low that we begin to see the path ahead of us. It is about leadership. I met great members of parliament, you know, at this meeting, and you know, I'm energized, I'm strengthened. And I believe that beyond today, I expect to do more, to stand up more, to speak more, to have more courage, to speak for justice in general, but more particularly to speak for LGBT justice. I thank you.
Thank you very much. The Honourable Jack Patrick Lewis, Congressman of Massachusetts, House of Representatives, United States of America.
It is very humbling to be surrounded by such distinguished colleagues. Some of you I've known for years, and others I've only had the opportunity to admire from afar. I want to join everyone in thanking our Maltese hosts, also thanking the Parliamentarians for Global Action and the Global Equality Caucus, on which I have the great honor of serving as a member of their steering committee. I will admit being invited to speak in the Maltese Parliament was not on my bingo card for this year. But to be honest, I also, until relatively recently, didn't think I'd have the opportunity to marry a brilliant man, or adopt beautiful children, or run successfully for elected office. So maybe today is the day I should start to expect the unexpected a little more often. It is so fitting that we gather in a country that sits at the crossroads of cultures and continents. As fiercely proud of its rich history and culture as it is of its vital role in the European Union and in global affairs, from its essential service during the two world wars and for its instrumental role in ending the Cold War, Malta continues to prove that love of country and love of regional and international cooperation and integration are not contradictory realities. And because of that, Malta continues to be a beacon of hope for us all. I also come from a small but mighty place, the state of Massachusetts in the United States, a state that also strives to celebrate its history of being a bright beacon of freedom and justice. Our state was the first to legalize same-sex marriage. We banned conversion therapy for young people. We continue to expand access to HIV prevention medication and to do more and more to make sure that LGBTQ young people and seniors are supported. But my country is far from perfect, something that I'm sure is news to none of you this morning. We have state governments nearly in every corner of our country who are waging a constant war on our community. They seek to put us back in the closet, to dismantle our rights and our families, to keep us afraid, and to erase us from public life and civil discourse. But in case that weren't dangerous enough, our country continues to do what I fear it has always done, but which is to export hate. We have our own homegrown right-wing and Christian religious extremism that we can't just contain, apparently, within our own country. We must export it with zeal, sending hate, money, and support that plays on people's worst fears across the world, which continues to lead on a daily basis to deadly results. Those of us here from North America and Europe must do more than simply acknowledge our role in previous and ongoing colonial oppression and resist, as tempting as it may be, to evangelize our very prescriptive form of LGBTQ plus advocacy. We must work to reject any form of neocolonialism and instead support one another as equal partners on this journey in a way that is truly intentional, intersectional, and international. Because we must be strong and united across party lines, across national borders, against the forces that threaten us all. The rise of right-wing nationalism and populism, ideologies that threaten our hard-won progress for LGBTQ rights, reproductive freedom, and gender equity, along with threatening regional and international cooperation. Which is why this gathering this morning is so vital, so we can learn from one another, while also embracing that the struggle for reproductive and LGBTQ plus rights must not be led by external forces, certainly not led by any one of our countries alone, but instead must be led by the local LGBTQ community itself. Our struggle for equity and justice is never ending. And be it anti-discrimination or constitutional protections, family code or tax law, all our efforts move us closer to being that shiny example that many of us already claim to be, or those of us who are more humble acknowledge they seek to be. So let us support one another, inspire one another, joyfully embrace the reality that we are on this journey towards true equity and justice, and that journey will take multiple paths, and that it is only collectively through working together that we will defeat the far-right populism and extreme religious nationalism that threatens all of our countries and the hard-fought freedoms we hold so dear and those freedoms we still dare to dream about. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The Honourable Ulrika Westerlund, Member of Parliament of Sweden. Your floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, dear fellow members of Parliament and dear fellow human rights activists. It's a real honour to be speaking in the Parliament of Malta today, a country that has, like no other country in Europe, shown the way that it's possible to make rapid changes in the area of human rights for LGBTI people if there is just political will. Sweden is a country that is often saluted for our achievements in the area of equality, which is very true when it comes to especially gender equality, but less true when it comes to, for example, rights and equality for migrants. But we do have broad political consensus when it comes to the importance of gender equality and women's rights. We have worked for decades to try to combat gender-based violence, to improve women's representation in politics, and to achieve equal pay. The current Conservative government have also agreed to put the right to abortion that has been a reality in Sweden since 1974 in the Swedish constitution. On the area of LGBTI rights, Sweden has also come a long way with equal marriage, recognition of same-sex parenthood, discrimination legislation inclusive of LGBT people, etc., but there are also some very crucial aspects missing. We don't have a legal gender recognition act based on self-identification, like Malta has, and like all our fellow Nordic countries have. Just yesterday, two parties in the current government made clear that they will not be introducing such a law this mandate, but they will limit themselves to small improvements, like the ones that my fellow Swede Fredrik Sabestad mentioned previously. This is what is now politically possible in Sweden. Unfortunately, we will have to wait longer. Trans people in Sweden will have to keep waiting. This made me think about how some political topics are impossible in some countries and quite other ones are impossible in other countries. About 8 years ago, I was organizing a talk at Stockholm Pride. I was the then president of the Swedish LGBTI Federation, RFSL. It was with an Irish activist and a Maltese activist. We were going to talk about why these two countries at that point in time were doing so well on LGBTI rights and so poorly on reproductive rights, especially then abortion. On the day of the talk, I posted as usual on Facebook to urge people to come to this session because I thought this is going to be a great conversation that you don't want to miss. I tagged the participants, and it wasn't long until the Maltese activist reached out to me and asked me to please not tag them. It was only then that I understood how sensitive the topic of reproductive rights, or especially abortion, was and still is in Malta. During these past 8 years, many things have happened. For example, in 2018, Ireland removed their total ban on abortion, which had been in effect since 1983. This happened through a referendum, and I was in Dublin with my Irish partner for this historic event. This is one of the political experiences that I had that seriously made me cry. All of us were like, nobody could stop the tears, and even now that I'm talking about it, the tears almost keep coming back. Watching the young Irish people that had their lives changed completely overnight was overwhelming. The yes side also won by surprisingly high numbers, and me and my partner understood the revolution that had taken place when we heard one of my partner's relatives talk about this referendum. This is a Catholic woman in her 80s, and she said, if you don't vote yes, you're not supporting women. It's as simple as that. The other political experience that I have that made me cry happened in 2013 when Sweden removed the forced sterilizations of people who want to change legal gender. This was something that I worked hard to achieve in my former capacity as the president of RFSL. Back then, I could not imagine that we now, 10 years later, still would have to wait even longer to have this 50-year-old legislation on legal gender recognition, to have it completely reformed, to be similar to the one that you have here in Malta. In your law here in Malta on legal gender recognition, you have spelled out the rights to physical integrity and bodily autonomy. To me, that sounds like rights that should be applied also in the area of reproductive rights, and I'm certain that many people and politicians in Malta see this in the same way. So, I'm certain that I will get to see Malta change also your law on abortion, and that I might then have to repeat that seminar at Stockholm Pride, or maybe here in Malta Pride, and have Irish and Maltese activists talk about how LGBTI rights and reproductive rights have become a reality in both those countries. Thank you.
The Honourable David Bedo, Prime Member of the Parliament of Hungary.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here, and it's a great pleasure, and it honestly warms my heart to see so many legislators from so many countries fighting for this very important cause. I'm David Bedő. I'm a member of the Hungarian Parliament, and it probably won't come as a surprise when I say I'm an opposition member of the Hungarian Parliament. I also chair the LGBTQ intergroup of the Hungarian Parliament. We always talk about Malta as a positive example when it comes to human and LGBTQ rights. And there is a very good reason for that. This country has achieved more in a decade than most countries in 50 years. I used to live in Malta, actually, 12 years ago. It was a very different country back then, and it's very interesting to see how it changed when I come back now. The achievements this country has made in a decade are immense. Malta has become one of the most friendly countries towards LGBTQ people in only a decade. Malta has come a long, long way. And I must tell you, so as someone who is coming from Hungary, Malta gives us hope. It gives the Hungarian society and the Hungarian LGBTQ community hope. It gives us hope because it is clear that you can transform policies and society in a positive way in such a short span of time. And Hungary really needs that hope right now. We need that light at the end of a very, very dark tunnel. I'm sure you've heard of how the Hungarian government treats our community. I come from a country that is the exact opposite of Malta. In the past decade, it's been getting worse and worse. I come from a country that is the only European country to have a homophobic propaganda law, where all LGBTQ depiction is banned for people under 18. This has led to bookstores wrapping up books with gay characters in them. And this has also led to televisions that they are forced to not show anything on TV before 10 p.m. that has anything related to homosexuality. I come from a country where the government stigmatizes and scapegoats the LGBTQ community. I come from a country where the largest propaganda TV praises what happens in Uganda. I come from a country where our leaders often do the most disgusting thing by washing together the community with pedophiles just to further their hate-filled politics. And this is exactly, and this is precisely why we founded the LGBTQ intergroup in the Hungarian Parliament called For a Diverse Hungary. 1 year ago, 5 parties and 20 members of parliament came together to fight for this oppressed community in our country. We said, enough is enough, and we are going to do everything in our power to help and progress the LGBTQ rights in Hungary. We have been working in the past year to show the Hungarian society and the Hungarian community that there are politicians, There are political parties in Hungary that care about them and fight for them. We have a long way to go, but we will not give up. We will not waver. We will fight to gain equality for all. Thank you all for your support and help. I hope one day Hungary will become like Malta. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The Honorary Farud Bancsika, Senator of the Kingdom of Belgium. The floor is yours.
Good morning, honorable colleagues. My name is Farud Bancsika. I'm the Vice President of the Belgium Senate and a member of the Council of Europe. If you had told me when I was a queer brown teenager in a small Belgian town that I would be speaking to you today in this parliament, I would not have believed you. And yet, here I am. And I'm incredibly thankful for this opportunity. I grew up in a very humble household. My parents are first-generation immigrants from Tunisia. And on a clear day, like today, you can see the island of Malta from their Tunisian village. The European dream was so close for them. But even in their wildest dream, they couldn't have never imagined that their child would become a politician, a representative of the people of the country they migrated to. I take the responsibility of representation very seriously. I stand here, not only as a senator, I stand here today to represent non-binary and queer people all over Europe. I stand here to represent European citizens that are suffering hate and discrimination. And sadly, I stand here to represent the thousands of Africans that have died in the Mediterranean, trying to reach the European dream just like my parents. I represent them because the only difference between them and me is luck. Honorable colleagues, Europe is not founded on luck. Europe is founded on human rights. And the most fundamental rights is to live a life that is free of harm and discrimination, to have the right to have a dignified life. In 2020, I was appointed General Rapporteur on LGBTIQI plus rights by the Council of Europe. And unfortunately, I had to conclude that the foundations of Europe are becoming increasingly shaky and hatred against LGBTI people is on the rise. After decades of significant progress in Europe towards equality for LGBTQI plus people, the recent years has marked by an increase in hate speech and hate crimes against our people. The rise in hate crimes is not an accident. It's the result of a well-organized attack on the basic rights of LGBTIQ plus people. And more often, the hate is fueled by politicians and religious leaders, not minorities, not migrants or refugees, contrary to popular beliefs. And instead of repairing our foundation by strengthening human rights, we are building higher walls around Europe. This costs lives. And if my parents wouldn't have migrated, probably I would have looked longingly from the house at the seaside, at Malta, at Europe. And as a queer Muslim, I probably would have tried to take a boat, hoping to reach Europe, hoping to reach a continent that is safer for me. And this is true for all refugees. All of them are just looking for a dignified life and respect for their human rights. So, honorable colleagues, let us repair the foundation of Europe, the continent we are all born free and equal, no matter what your skin color, gender, sexual orientation, gender identity or expression or religion is. Let us respect the right to live of all people, all LGBTQI plus people from all over the world. And let's never forget. The Pride started as a protest for the right to exist and to be safe, a protest that is unfortunately still necessary today. So, let's be loud. We are here. We are queer, and we have never been strong as today. So let's keep on fighting together, colleagues.
The Honourable Sabuna Shesh, member of the National Assembly of Kenya.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to take this opportunity to thank you for hosting us. I am Sabina Chege, I'm a member of Parliament from Republic of Kenya. I've served Parliament, this is my third term, Mr. Speaker, and I'm so humbled this morning to speak before you, and I want to congratulate all the speakers who spoke before me. Mr. Speaker, my country is one of those countries that are taking baby steps. I would like to say this morning that it's only up to this week on Tuesday where our judiciary passed the first right of association for the LGBTQ to be registered as association. And so as per the law of Kenya, Mr. Speaker, I would want to say that we have taken very slow baby steps that we should get there. But in the meantime, for the last 2 or 3 days, Mr. Speaker, having interacted with so many of you and others, I am more than challenged that I need to take up this matter more seriously, and especially in our parliament in Kenya, where we already have a law to criminalize LGBTQ in my country. And so, Mr. Speaker, I have learned so much, starting from what Malta has done and other countries, that I should go back and share. For the record, I'm heterosexual and I'm a Christian, but I also believe that we are all uniquely created, Mr. Speaker. And so the way I did not choose to be born a woman is the same way that I should respect other people, and I'll be one of the champions in my country to encourage people to know that we are all created uniquely. And so even for the Christians, that judgment belongs to God, and no one chose to be born the way they were born, including ourselves, who are women or men. And as elected members, we are representatives of not just the majority, but also the minority. And so we are challenged this morning that as we go back to our own House of Representatives, that we should be able to represent all, including the voice of the minority. Mr. Speaker, one of the things I've learned is that it is important to have allies, to have champions, to have people who can be able to take this forward. And it's also important that we fight and protect human rights, and these human rights are not limited. In my country, Mr. Speaker, the only recognized group is the intersex group, but even in the recognition, they are only recognized at the census, during counting, and during voting, Mr. Speaker. But the issues of health, insurance, the issues of education, they are still very far much behind. And I'm taking this up as I go back to my country to make sure that we have proper legislations where we'll fight for the rights of everybody, and especially to make sure that the right to access to health, access to education, they will not be treated like second-class citizens, but they are going to be treated equally like any other Kenyan. And so, Mr. Speaker, as I finish, I want to welcome all of you to work with me and visit Kenya. Kenya is the most beautiful country in Eastern Central Africa. We are the only country that has a national park at the city, at the capital of Nairobi, where you can be able to enjoy the animals. You can see the big four, and 40 kilometers away from the city, you can enjoy a safari and watch the big five. You can actually have breakfast with the lions in my country. So I welcome all of you. And I am so strong, and I believe that we can work together to make sure that the right of everybody, and especially the minority, is respected in our respective countries. I thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you very much. We go now to Estonia. Bjorn Eduard Odinets, Member of Parliament of Estonia.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Speaker. I am Eduard Odinets, a member of Estonian Parliament, head of Legal Affairs Committee there, and also chair of LGBT Intergroup in Estonian Parliament. It's my honor to be here, to be a guest, and also it's my honor to be proud Estonian. Why? Because I'm very proud of achievements that we have in our legislation last month. It is gender-neutral marriage and children adoption for all. And it is first of former Soviet countries. I'm very proud about that. It was a very long journey. It was 30 years of struggle, of fight. And I'm so happy to be a part of this historical moment and to be a spokesperson for all this legislation. And it is fantastic. It is amazing. I thought, what I do with my several minutes of glory here. I decided to say thank you. But not to my mom and dad or my partner. Of course, them too. But to all my international, political, social democratic family. To say thank you to all my sisters and brothers in Rainbow Rose. To say thank you to Mark Cyrus, also for dear Helena Dali, who participated at our Baltic Prides, marching with us and stay with us for LGBT and equal rights for all in our Baltic countries. Why I say so much about this, how thankful I am, because it is a question about international solidarity, if you stay for your rights. It is so important. Okay, we know it is the will of leadership of a country, it is political will of leading parties, it is positive attitude in public, but it is nothing if you don't have very strong, very solidar people staying behind you. We all know how hard is all this struggle that we have, all this fight that we have for our rights. But only if you have somebody supporting, inspiring, motivating you, your struggle can be successful. Why it is so important to have events like we have today here in beautiful Malta, to stay shoulder to shoulder, shoulder together, supporting, motivating, and inspiring each other. For me, all this topic is about solidarity and cooperation. Especially, like we see, the far-right power united against us, against our thoughts, against our ideas. For me, it means we must to be more united, more solidar, more cooperative. Dear colleagues, I recall all of you, never stop to help others. Not to stop help our countries. Others to be more equal, to be more inclusive, to be more happy. Because if people, if countries around us are happy, we are very happy too. Happy Pride, my darlings.
The Honorary Anna Hoy, Senator of the Republic of Ireland.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'm really very excited to be here with you today amongst my Rainbow community, where I always feel most safe and most at home. And I'm really thrilled to be here as part of the Rainbow Caucus from Ireland with my colleagues from the Senate. My pronouns are she and her. And I will actually have a bit of an LGBTQ flex for a moment, because I'm the first and out bisexual member of Parliament, and I think it's important to acknowledge that and to own that when we have so much erasure within our own community. I'm very proud to come from a country that heralded in with great fanfare and rainbow marriage equality a number of years ago. Also, the abortion rights campaign, two of the proudest moments and campaigns of my life. And at the same time of marriage equality, we also brought in gender recognition. And in the 7 years since, wouldn't you believe it, the sky has not actually fallen in, despite what some pundits are saying. But there are those who seek to undo that progress, not just in Ireland, but across Europe and indeed globally. And if I was at home right now, I would be standing in solidarity with my trans community in Ireland, in Dublin, because, and I would be counter-protesting most vehemently, there is a reprehensible speaker who has come to Ireland to spread her gender hate. And she has that platform in Ireland today in Dublin. And I want to say and send my solidarity from here in Malta. And let me tell her, all the way here from Malta, that her hateful rhetoric against the community within our community is not welcome, either in Ireland, in Europe, globally, or anywhere. Hate will not win, and we absolutely must not let it. And let me tell you that in Ireland, a rather western isle, a rock at the edge of Europe, we look at concern at some of the rise, the global rise and spread of organised hate. I think someone used that term today, and I think that's really, really good. This organised hate, this organised movement of intolerance, which is spreading not only across Europe, but across globally. And we have speakers here from all over the world who are highlighting both the progress that we've had and the leadership that we've had within our communities, but also highlighting those who are seeking to strip away that progress. And they are organised, and they are funded, and they are motivated by a concept that I cannot even comprehend, this deep intrinsic intolerance of difference. The tolerance of a difference, not only against obviously our own community, which we're here as part of EuroPride and the global community to talk about, but this intolerance against refugees, migrants, people of different religions, colour or creed, intolerance against bodily autonomy, abortion, trans rights, voter rights. These all come as part of a package, and I think hate does not discriminate in who it, or differentiate who it discriminates against. It might be the only thing it doesn't actually discriminate against, actually, is who it may spread its hate against. And I think all of us will have a role to play in countering this intolerance in our own communities, but also part of that global solidarity movement in Europe and across the world. And as if we're not busy enough, now we also have to stand up against this as well. I will finish by saying that I'm so inspired by the pockets of rainbow resistance that I come across all of the time, from, you know, the refugee that danced against it all, to the trans activist that I met a couple of months ago in Tanzania, to the friend of mine who flies a rainbow flag defiantly out her window every single day in Tbilisi in Georgia, even though they pull it back down. And I'm so inspired. I have a friend who came to Ireland seeking international protection, a trans friend, and they suffered in our direct provision system, which is a scourge on Ireland. But they've now been reunited with their daughter, and they've made Ireland their home. And it really fills me with so much pride that we have been a part of their happy story. So I'm just going to finish and say, trans rights are human rights, love is love, and long live that global rainbow resistance that all of us are a part of.
The Honourable Catalin Dragostanita, Member of Parliament of Romania.
Hello, my dear friends, esteemed parliamentarians, distinguished officials, dear friends, and
especially
the LGBT community, because you are really the most honourable in this part of the gathering. You are the ones who are, pushing for the change, and we really respect you, and we are here for you. I'm Catalin Tanita. And I stand before you today not as a representative of Romania's Repair Party, of course I stand as a member of the Romanian Party, but I stand also as an advocate and a soldier of the battle for human dignity and rights. I bring a message of solidarity, yet also a somber reminder of the challenges that stretch out before us in Romania. In the chambers of our Romanian Parliament, in the halls of our local governments, there remains a silence. No openly gay individual has yet to serve in these corridors of power. Let that sink in. So basically in Romania, we have something like 50,000 elected members in various levels, like MPs or mayors or local councillors, but none of them declared, you know, I'm an openly gay person and I support the LGBT community. So you should understand this in order to feel the oppression we still have in some parts of the European Union related to LGBT rights. There is not just an absence, it's a void. And it's not just a void in our parliament, but a void in the very soul of our nation. This void speaks to the collective responsibility to close the gap that divides us, to mend the tears in the very fabric of our country. As we gather here in Malta, a nation that stands as a beacon of progress and equality, leading the European Union in the Rainbow Index, we must acknowledge our position, the Romanian position, in the other end of the spectrum. We, along with our friends from Hungary and our friends from Poland, we are near Belarus in terms of Rainbow Index. It's something like less than 10% gap between Romania, Poland, Hungary and Belarus. You should understand that. Let's not forget, Todd, it's often from the depths of our challenges that the great leaps of progress arise. I walked the streets of Bucharest in the Pride Parades from their nascent beginnings, when the brave few who marched were met with the voice of hatred rather than the arms of embrace. But let me say that, from the modest beginning has grown a movement that my party, Repair, has proudly joined this year as the first political team to march in unity. And now I'm asking you, the members of some other political families in the European Union, to ask your parties in the Romanian to come with us in the next election. It's not something we want to be like a differentiator. It's something we want to be together, no matter we are for New Europe or EPP or SD or the Greens or the other parties. It's very important to be there together at the Pride marches in Romania or in some other countries in the Eastern Europe. Also, one story, it was the second year I marched with my daughter. My daughter said, you know, my daughter, she's 11 now, and she said, I want to march with you. And for the second year, we took a lot of pictures, and basically we went there as a family to support the community. So, my fellows, I believe that we stand on the cusp of change in Romania. I see a Romania not defined by its division, but by the unity. Not by the fears, but by the hopes. Exclusion, but by the potential for inclusion. As we look to the future, let us remember that the rights of the one are inexorably tied to the rights of the all. Let us also heed the call to extend the umbrella of justice and equality to issues of gender. For as long as one person is denied the basic rights of freedom and dignity, we all walk in the shadows. Countries like Malta and Romania must do more to protect and advance sexual and reproductive rights. We must ensure women have a right, real right to abortion and remove legislative obstacles that hinder that fundamental right. And also in this quest, let us honor those who have paid the ultimate price for the truth, like the Maltese journalist Daphne Caruana Galizia. Her sacrifice illuminates the perils that lie on the path to justice, but also on the lights the lights forward. Thank you very much.
The Honorary Jerry Butimer, Senator of the Republic of Ireland.
Lasco Herrick, Paul, the Parliament, Mahon Fein, Agus Rahon, Shannon Aaron, Agus Colacti, Fintan, Agusani, is Kushmur and Be, Anuv, Erin O'Cod, on a special to show. Broad and Hurup, Honadiv Galair. Happy Europe Pride to you all. It's fitting that we're here in Malta. It's also fitting that as the first out speaker of an Irish House and as the first chair of our Equality Caucus, I'm so proud to be here. My speech, thanks to Annie and Fintan, has been shelved. And thanks to all of you in this chamber, I've rewritten everything that I was going to say. This is something we could never have imagined 40 years ago. Cyrus, well done. The contributions this morning here have been both uplifting, inspiring, and challenging, if we're to be honest to each other and with each other. We're privileged to be members, elected members, at varying different levels. That gives us a passport into the lives of so many people we meet every day. And that is why, if we do nothing else from this wonderful event in this beautiful country, we must lead
whether we're in Framingham or Malta or Wales or Africa or in the heart of Europe, we must lead. And there can be no complacency. There can be no saying it's great to be at EuroPride and we'll wave our flags and we'll blow our whistles and we'll create visibility. And visibility is important. And we in this chamber and our colleagues are living manifestations of elected visibility where we can do one thing, influence change. Whether it's in Africa or Hungary or parts of the world where the rights of all of us as LGBT members is challenged every day. Please lead. Challenge the legislative programme of our governments, in our parliaments, and put down the motion. Put down the question. And don't be afraid. Because you know what? Someone mentioned earlier about the silence. We've emerged from the silence. We can't put the sprinkles back in the bottle. We're proud and we're out. And that requires us to bring others with us. And the story of marriage equality in Ireland wasn't just about the political leadership. It was the power of the personal, as Annie and Fintan have said. It was the stories that our friends or family or colleagues have told. My friend bringing his children to Pride. Brilliant. Our Welsh colleagues speaking about the same thing. My good friend Jack Lewis, married with kids. 50 years ago, 40 years ago, 20 years ago, gay people can't have kids. Oh my God. Today, we're proud parents and grandparents whose children are leading the world, and the world, as you said, is not a bad place. So members and friends, let us lead. Let us ensure that our friends and colleagues in the world where they can't be like we are can in 20 years' time celebrate what we're celebrating today. And I'm conscious of my time, Mr. Speaker, and I'm going to finish. Harvey Milk famously said, "I've come to recruit you." Can I say to you all, let us recruit the next generation of leaders by our actions, by our thoughts, and by our words. Our words do matter. Thank you for being here. Thank you for what you're doing. It does matter. And our world is a better place because of what we are all doing. And I'll finish on this. Let us not worry about those who strive to fight against us. Let us worry about those who we can bring with us. The next industrial revolution is taking place in technology. The next revolution for us in human rights is taking place as we stand now. We are conscious of Ukraine today. We're conscious of that war. That's an important fight for us as well. Happy Pride. Thank you for your courtesy and your hospitality, Mr. Speaker, in this wonderful country. We have a great saying in Irish, Ní nart go cur le chéile. Go raibh maith.
Grazie hafna. I call now Ms. Kira Marie Peter Hansen, Member of the European Parliament.
Thank you very much. And dear colleague, it's been very inspiring to hear all of your stories, and I'm very eager also to learn many more of you better in the break. And it's an honour to be here and speak with you. It is okay to be normal. This is a political slogan that is circulating in Denmark right now. On billboards and commercials, on Facebook and on Twitter, you will see pictures of a white couple, male and female, of course, with children, followed by these words, "It's okay to be normal." I grew up in Denmark, and as a little girl, never once did I question whether my gender identification would disadvantage me in life. Never did it cross my mind that if I married a man, it would hinder my political career. Never once did I wonder whether the fact that my sexuality and my gender identity is similar to the majority of the population would be a barrier for my future success. I never doubted whether it is okay to be normal or not. And this is exactly what it means to be represented, not to doubt whether you belong to society. It's okay to be normal, and as you've guessed, this slogan comes from the right-wing party in Denmark. But as you also know, and as many of you have touched, this is a global narrative. It's a global hate campaign by the far right created to spread fear in the attempt to grab power.
and they deliberately try to split societies by dividing people into normal ones and into freaks, pedophiles or threats. They create scapegoats, whether it's the Muslim or the black community, immigrants or refugees, women or LGBTI people, and we need to stand against it. Because fear and hate are the greatest threats to our freedom, our human rights and our democracies. And as Mr. Adam Price said, hate is organizing. And this is why we need genuine representation. Because representation and leadership is not a matter of compassion, but of fostering a culture of acceptance and equality within societies. Identity should not be barriers to happiness and success. Generous representation is when everyone recognizes themselves in politics. Representation is about creating a society where everyone, regardless of their sexuality, gender identity or gender expression, can thrive and contribute to their fullest potential. Representation is about creating societies where it's okay to be Kira, it's okay to be Mark, it's okay to be Kim, it's okay to be anyone. But to get there, our society needs visible LGBTI leaders and role models to challenge and to inspire so that others can see that there is space and that you can take the space. And if not, we will make the space together. So I'm very happy to be here with all of you, and I look forward to march with you later today and to continue the fight for the coming years. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Sam van de Poet, member of the City Council of Aalst, Belgium.
Thank you very much, Mr. Deputy Speaker. Dear colleagues, dear friends, feeling free in your neighborhood, community or city, being allowed to be yourself and show yourself on the street, walking hand in hand with your loved one and smiling lovingly at each other in public. Your personal life, like that of others, takes place in public spaces. Dear friends, mostly we would like you to stay awake on those early Saturday mornings, especially after going out, dear Rainbow Rose friends. But this morning, I would like you to close your eyes. Yes, don't hesitate, you can. Now imagine walking over a rainbow crossroad. You're walking over the colors red, orange, yellow, green, blue, and violet. Now, how does that feel? Great, doesn't it? To make this a bit interactive, I would like you to raise your hand if you live in a city with at least one rainbow crossroad. Well, Aalst, a city of 90,000 inhabitants, and where I'm member of the City Council for almost 18 years, unfortunately doesn't have one. Or I should say, doesn't want one. And that is a clear political choice. And let it be clear, I'm a member of the opposition. And no, of course I'm not saying that hanging out rainbow flags and marking crossroads in our colors would be the Valhalla for our community, but a permanent symbolic presence, which is not only waving the flag on Idaho, does show that everyone, regardless of sexual orientation or gender, is welcome. But of course, symbolism is far from enough. Cities should and can do more. Hanging out a rainbow flag is an important signal, but also nothing more than a symbolic step. Cities, towns, and regions need to undertake further actions and policy initiatives in consultation with civil society. That's why we need to encourage local governments to adopt explicit and integrated local LGBTIQ plus policies, because a local policy has a huge impact on everyone's daily life. Through smaller and bigger actions, we can make the lives of many residents just a little bit more pink, and I will just mark a few. Creating safe spaces within our cities is crucial. Local governments should invest in LGBTIQ plus community centers and support organizations that provide essential resources, counseling, and a sense of belonging. These spaces become sanctuaries for those who may face rejection elsewhere, and they are vital for mental health and well-being. Local councils can also introduce diversity charters in sports clubs or other local associations. They can make information on gender and sexuality available in city services, schools and libraries. And they can provide space in residential care centers for intimacy and, yes, also for LGBTIQ plus sexuality to avoid that our community crawls back into the closet. We must also work on our law enforcement agencies, who must be part of the change we want to achieve. Local governments should ensure that police and first responders receive training on how to handle hate crimes and discrimination incidents effectively. LGBTIQ individuals must have confidence that their concerns will be taken seriously and that justice will be served. Dear friends, leadership matters. Local politicians must use their platforms to speak out against discrimination and actively promote LGBTIQ plus acceptance. When leaders lead by example, they inspire a culture of belonging, what we've learned this week, and respect throughout our communities. And I want to take the opportunity to thank the Human Rights Conference organizers for an amazing job they've done this week. Building safe and accepting cities for our community is not an option. It is an imperative rooted in justice and human rights. Local governments must lead the way by enacting policies that safeguard rights, create safe spaces, and promote acceptance. By doing so, we honor the spirit of Europe Right and lay the foundation for cities that are welcoming, diverse, and vibrant for all residents. Together, dear friends and colleagues, we build cities where every individual, regardless of their sexual orientation or gender identity, can stand tall, proud, and unafraid. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I will now invite the Honourable Graziella Tartprevi, opposition spokesperson for equality and children's rights. She is a member of the Maltese Parliament. The floor is yours.
Good morning, Mr. Speaker. Good morning, allies, and good morning, colleagues. First of all, I would like to thank each and every speaker here this morning for sharing with us different realities which definitely enrich our work as politicians. I would like to start also off my address by concurring with Honourable Fatim Diarra of Finland. Because, yes, I would like to say that despite the historical progress that has taken place in Malta over the last years, the members of LGBTIQ plus community and sometimes even the families still face systemic prejudice and hurdles to fully participate in society. In this regard, Malta has achieved a lot. And of course, we are happy that the country is one of the most LGBTIQ plus friendly and that the community has been given many deserved rights. And I thank the Hungarian MP for rightly saying that, yes, Malta is LGBTIQ plus friendly. However, to accomplish long-term change towards a more inclusive and fair society, public discourse around the rights of the LGBTIQ plus community needs to change profoundly by placing them, the LGBTIQ plus community themselves, as experts, as specialists, and as key decision makers at all stages. As politicians and legislators, we need to support and accompany rights holders. We need to do this to guarantee that they have the continuous political authority and influence needed to challenge social and political systems, as well as practices that promote discrimination, segregation and seclusion. As legislators, we must ensure that the LGBTIQ plus community emphasizes their rights, and we must incentivize the changes that are still needed within the community. Also, we should offer protected domains where rights holders can associate, where they can understand, and where they can also develop policies and approaches to advance their lives, security, and well-being. Diversity and inclusion are two key words that I wish to emphasize. Because diversity shows that people are different in many ways, and yet they still need to be included regardless of their background. On the other hand, inclusion describes the degree to which we significantly engage with those people who might otherwise be excluded or marginalized, as is in the case of the LGBTIQ plus community. We must create an environment of belonging, and we must guarantee that the LGBTIQ individuals have equal access and opportunities, and that they are given all the necessary resources and funds to partake fully in society. The importance of having role models in the country cannot be overstated. While not all members of the LGBTIQ community are open about their sexuality, this has been said several times here this morning and also throughout this week in various events that I participated in, those that are forthcoming can definitely have a significant position as a role model. As we are in fact seeing, yes, we can see the influence that having role models will have. Hence, let us strive to ensure that there is an acceptable diverse representation at every level of leadership in the country, being at the workplace or in non-government associations, be it in education, be it in politics, and also in other key areas of society. I want to conclude this short speech by saying that this is a journey that we are all in it together. And together, we need to learn from each other. I want to also underline that it is respect, it is understanding and love that need to be the beacons that will lead us together throughout this journey. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Graziella Tarprevi. I invite now the Honorable Katia De Giovanni, member of the Parliament of Malta. She is also the chairperson of our Social Affairs Committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, honorable members, dear colleagues. When I was asked to participate in today's conference, I was both honored as well as delighted. Today's conference, in my experience, represents the culmination of one of the issues I tackle during my career as a parent, an academic, an educator, previously in compulsory education, and also as practicing organizational psychologist, apart, of course, from being a parliamentarian. We have indeed come a very long way in Malta. As a student in psychology in the 90s, I remember being presented with LGBTIQ as deviant and something to be treated. These days are gone now, with the very able work of Commissioner Helena Dalli, MEP Cyrus Engerer, and colleague MP Randolph De Battista, amongst others present with us today who have worked very hard for such bright days to come in Malta. In my career, however, I have come across many young people embarking on their studies in the hope of having a successful career. I have also met others who have moderate to severe difficulties to integrate in life. It is my firm belief that the topic we are discussing today has its firm roots in the type of dialogue that is carried out within families, over a cup of coffee or dinner, as well as the discourse and curricula that are evident in the early years of our educational programs. These are the main building blocks of the topic that we are discussing today. It is essential to review what is taken for granted, for example, with what gender stereotype toys we are exposing our youngsters to in their upbringing and the kind of language that is used over discussions and personal stories, also involving careers as well as relationships. As individuals, these experiences in our early childhood create schemas within which we psychologically interpret the world around us and with which, as children, adolescents and adults, we will make our choices. Therefore, advocating dialogue, turn-taking skills and tolerance in the earlier curricula, followed up by such concepts on cross-curricular programs in our schools, is indeed a must. Most of the work will be ready and forecasted rather than a reaction to make amends once individuals are already adults and expected to fully function as citizens in the world today. Research indicates that tertiary educational programs ought to collaborate to incorporate LGBTIQ identities within and across programs, departments, universities, and placement opportunities beyond the traditional classrooms. Moreover, research ethics committees, of which I admit I'm part of, and admission forms should be revised to offer a range of gender identity options. Moreover, for educational administrators, professional development opportunities need to focus on the understanding of LGBTIQ concepts and school-based issues covering what constitutes a welcoming and inclusive environment in schools for all. Moreover, recruitment should support staff with LGBTIQ research agendas. May I also remark that the University of Malta has a department devoted to gender studies set up in 2012, and that, however, issues in relation to such topics of discussion should not be relegated to this department, but should be discussed in all faculties and departments within educational institutions. Such is the case within the Faculty of Social Wellbeing, within which I am also a resident academic. One needs to mention that the University of Malta, in fact, organizes an annual LGBTIQ symposium, bringing together research studies reflecting the development of this community around the world. However, in our educational institutions, discussions of inclusion have many a time only focused on levels of ability. One needs to broaden this perspective to include also sexual identity and also race, amongst other factors also mentioned today in our discussion. In the transition towards the world of work, employment opportunities and recruitment exercises should reflect individual ability and potential, and not in any way marginate those who do not fit in the so-called usual norm. Such was our move in fostering and adoption, where we are totally disregarding sexual orientation and rightfully focusing on the ability to parent. Therefore, the participation of all individuals who are available to work in employment and their full inclusion in life is both a moral and practical imperative. Workplace abuse and discrimination cannot be tolerated in any way or form. Abuse and discrimination harms workers' health, limits their capacity to enjoy a full life, and represents threats to their human rights to just and favorable conditions at work. At the same time, the participation and meaningful inclusion of all workers has the potential to bring the benefit of different perspectives for solutions to organizational problems, as well as the development of new products and services, including entering and effectively servicing new and complex markets. There are many interventions we can do in this regard, but there are a few questions on whether these interventions do, in fact, achieve their intended objectives, and whether these are perceived as fair by all, and crucially, if the change intended on our interventions in our daily life are, in fact, intended as the outcome. In order to address these gaps, there are several important considerations. First, interventions based on theory and evidence from previous research about these effectiveness and the urgency to remedy disadvantages is an imperative to ensure that planned interventions are based on decades of existing research about prejudice and also discrimination. I'm aware of the time, Mr. Speaker. I had
Me
so
too.
Much more to say. But to conclude, because I'm getting...
I will give you a little bit more space.
Yes, please.
Because you're my chairman of the Social Affairs Committee.
Yes, please. So, in conclusion, friends, I had so much more to say about the topic. We must push issues of inclusion high on our agenda. Participatory research is essential and encourages the ownership of the research process. This has been mentioned already. The coming together of researchers, research participants, and role switching in this regard is the way forward. Mr. Speaker, colleagues, I dream of a world when our discussion would be unnecessary, when such issues become our bread and butter, and when in our dear world the only things to worry about would be energy and climate change. However, we still have a long way to go. I am convinced that such dialogue at the moment is crucial, and we need to keep the momentum going. I thank Honourable Parliamentary Secretary Rebecca Buttigieg and all of you here for your incessant work in this regard. May we all follow suit together, as the whole is always much greater than the sum of parts. Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much, Honour Katia De Giovanni. I invite now the Honour Claudette Buttigieg, opposition spokesperson for civil rights, social dialogue and the fight against diabetes, is a member of the Maltese Parliament.
Thank you, Mr. President. When you are at the bottom of the list of speakers, there's very little to add. And as our colleagues very early in today's meeting from Uganda and then from Ireland said earlier, you kind of have to throw everything you've written away. And this is why I was taking notes, because I had a feeling this was going to happen to me, and it's going to take a bit also from what probably my colleague Randolph is going to have to say. We were doing really well with time until Katia kind of threw us in a bit of a different... But it's okay. I'm proud to be here. I've been a member of this parliament for the past 10 years, and I've always worked... for civil liberties, and today I contemplate as to what I was hearing from the different voices I heard coming from such a diverse representation. And I think the first thing which comes to mind is the issue of leadership, the issue of representation, and I think that was made very clear by many of you here. And I think one important point which was made was that even though we've made so much progress, and my colleague Graziella Tarkrevi just mentioned this, we should not sit on our laurels and we should not think that everything is fantastic. For my work in this regard, this week I was called irrelevant, and I am very proud to be irrelevant in this room today. But this reminds me how much work we still have to do. And sometimes, while it's good to be angry and forceful and march and everything, sometimes it is when we sit down and have a cup of coffee and listen to somebody who thinks you are irrelevant and explain to them what it means to fight for people's rights. Maybe we're not explaining each other, we're not explaining ourselves that clearly. I know it's hard to believe, but maybe we're not using the right language or the right method. I don't know, but we still have a lot to do. And passing the laws are not just the only thing that's going to make the change. I've said it in Parliament many, many times. We pass laws in this beautiful building, but are they trickling down? Are people living the laws which we are legislating? Some are abusing of certain decisions that are taken, and others are taking advantage of lack of clarity, perhaps, sometimes. Okay? So I think we still have a long way to go. Another theme which I took note of and circled a lot, because it was brought up many times, is fear. fear. Fear of the unknown, fear of what you don't understand, etc. But I think there's also an important fear which today might have made a few more people angry out there, which is fear of unity. You refer to it in a way. People will fear when they see people united on a front with other like-minded people, and not just from the same country, but from different countries. And people may not be aware, but sometimes fragmentation and the fact that this us and them attitude, or who did this first or who said that first, really makes the whole argument weak. To conclude, I think one of the most common messages I heard, even though not everybody said it today, but there was a sense of responsibility. I felt it in all the speeches today. Everybody who stood up in this room today said that they felt responsible, or that they feel that we need to do more. And this sense of responsibility distinguishes people like all of you distinguished guests here today in this room from many others. I don't think it's just about talking, and I don't think it's just about words, but it's also about action. So I take this opportunity to thank Cyrus for the initiative to bring such like-minded people together from such a diverse community. I thank Mr. Speaker, of course, for hosting us here today. And I really hope that we continue to work together, united in diversity, because at the end of the day, this was said also earlier, love is what really, really unites us. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Claudette Buttigieg. I invite now the Honourable Randolph De Battista, who is a member of the Inter-Parliamentary Union and a member of our Social Affairs Committee, is also a member of the Maltese Parliament.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is my favourite day in Parliament. I mean, come on, it has to be. Well, during these past days, I think that the most interesting event that I attended was a screening of a movie which involved two intersex youths raised in South Africa, Sharon Rose and Dima Katso. The movie is called Who I Am Not. Please take note of this movie. You have to watch it. Who I Am Not. And after the screening of the movie, there was a Q&A session with the protagonists. And one comment by Dima Katso struck me. She said, I feel a special feeling to be able to walk the streets of Valletta holding the hands of my partner without any sign of fear. And it struck me because there were times in Malta when people couldn't feel safe to walk the streets. And that moment took me to Uganda, because we can feel what people in Uganda are now facing after that disgusting law that was passed. And I have to salute you, Fox, for all the challenges you're putting, and I hope you will win at the Constitutional Court. A couple of weeks ago, I was asked by a journalist whether it's more difficult for me being the only gay member of parliament in Malta. And I said, well, it's easier for me than other members of parliament. And the journalist was shocked. It's easier for me because I know how it feels to be discriminated. I know how it feels to receive threats. I know how it feels to be seen different. So every time someone comes to me with a story, a teenager who's been threatened to be thrown out of home by his parents because of their sexuality,
a brave woman who confides in me that she has done an abortion, a migrant who is well established in Malta but is being threatened to be sent back because of some documents. I can offer a safe space because I know how it feels. And I say that I am a privileged gay man. I'm privileged because I found two loving parents who hugged me and cried. We cried together when I said that I'm gay. I'm privileged because there are thousands, millions of other gay people that do not find this love and support. And that's what gives me energy to help and fight so that other kids will find this love and support. 2 days ago, I received a notification on social media that I got a new message. It was a message by someone called Ian Miller. I went to his profile and I found that he was a proud evangelist on fire for Jesus from Oklahoma. And the message was full of hate and homophobia. I replied with my usual reply to such bigots. I said, "Oh, stop flirting, Ian. Believe me, it works." But this is very serious. The time and energy and money that is being invested to spread hatred and misinformation is unbelievable. Only now, as you are hearing these wonderful speeches, I lodged a police report, a formal hate speech report against a disgusting far-right politician that every day spreads hate. And he has just posted a disgusting, hateful message against one of our activists on gay rights. The same politician that we will see protest from him next week against Europe Right. So I call on to you and to everyone who is watching at home, those who say that pride marches are not needed, those who shamelessly come to me and say, "You're okay because you're gay, but you're not too gay." Well, I can multitask if you want. I call on everyone to reflect on this question. How can we allow hate to win over our message of love and hope? Today is a historic day in Malta. A historic day because we're having all these queer politicians, queer legislators meeting in the Maltese chamber, legislators that work for change. But change only comes through leadership. That's how Malta became from zero to hero. Don't listen to conservatives saying that society is not ready. Come on. That's what some people said when we decriminalized homosexuality in 1973. That's what some people said when we pushed for marriage equality with gender-neutral language in our laws. You will get all these people coming up with all kinds of excuses, including ridiculous ones. Well, we had politicians screaming that Mother's Day will be challenged now because of gender-neutral language, and that you cannot call your mum and dad mum and dad because of gender-neutral language. Well, you know what, mum, if you're watching, I still call you mum, and I will keep calling you mum. I love you, and I thank you for your support. We need leadership to stand up to those who are threatening gay rights, women's sexual health and reproductive rights, abortion rights, migrants' rights. We need leadership. We have to work harder to convince everyone that a society that embraces diversity and equality is a much better and much healthier society. Thank you all, and I tell you to come out of Parliament to see this wonderful exhibition about the 50 years of progress that is Labour's legacy on LGBTQ rights. Thank you very much.
Now I welcome to the concluding remarks by Mr. Cyrus Anger.
Wow. I am speechless, honestly. When we started this project to have this discussion here in Parliament today, we had a lot of doubts whether we would manage to bring so many legislators from all over the world to speak together, to share experiences, and to give hope to future generations. There were moments where we were giving up, because obviously we're a very small country at the periphery of two continents, and sometimes finding flights to come here is quite difficult, especially when you have Europe Pride going on and you have tens of thousands of people joining us here in the streets of Florian and Valletta to celebrate love. But we managed, and I have to thank so many people, and probably it's better not to thank anyone because I'll end up forgetting someone, which shouldn't be done. But if I could just share a few messages. First of all, to Claudette and Graziella, thank you so much. You are not irrelevant. You have done so much for the community, even when it was much more difficult than today, and I know what it means to fight, sometimes with people who might have the best of intentions. However, unfortunately, they cannot see how important it is for everyone to have the same rights. I know that you've been there from the beginning, suffering at times, maybe even today, but thank you, honestly, for all that you have done. Thank you to Katja and Randolph for being here, for always supporting what we do. And Mr. Deputy Speaker, I thank you for hosting this, and obviously the Speaker, who couldn't be with us today. Randolph mentioned Honourable Fox, and I think that when we were creating this, and as soon as we knew that one of the only two people in the Ugandan Parliament who voted against the Kill the Gays Bill was going to be here, we thought that that was going to be the biggest honour of having someone who, irrespective of the hate that is going on in Uganda, irrespective of the threats, irrespective of the bigoted hate that we're seeing, you stood up, you spoke out, you took government to court, you won, then the law went again to Parliament, it got voted in again, you were the only one to fight it, you're taking this to court. But we want you to know that you're not alone. We're all with you here. And there are so many others across the globe who will continue supporting you and supporting other members who are here from Africa and from other countries who have very big difficulties in order for you as well to achieve what some of us here have managed to achieve. And you are heroes for what you're doing in your respective countries, as I need to also mention my friend David Bedo in Hungary, who is doing an extremely good job against a lot of hate, my friend from Romania, and so many others where it is so difficult at the moment. But I know one thing, because when we started this fight ourselves and when we felt what you are feeling today, the one thing that I think, looking back, makes us mostly happy and satisfied with what we have done is the positive change that we have brought to a number of people. And in my mind, I remember a few, like Joanne Kassar, who had been 4 years going to the Maltese courts, one court after another, trying to, as a trans woman, trying to marry her male partner. However, this country did not treat her as one of her children. And she had to keep on going to the Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg. On the first day of a new government in 2013,
over a phone call between myself, Silvana Jus, today Commissioner Helena Dalli, and some others, we saw what we could do to have Joan Cassar given all her rights. And in fact, then she left her court case in the European Court of Human Rights because she was treated like all of the other women here in this country. And only a few weeks ago, we went to Gozo, Randolph and I, and we saw her smile on her face as she was there with her husband and two children, eating some pastizzi, and the joy that they have as a family is one of those things that give you all that satisfaction. The positive change that we brought here to those people who loved each other but could never show or have that love recognized. The smile on the face of two parents, Ronald and Mary, as soon as they saw their child marry his lifelong partner, that smile and satisfaction that they had on their face, that their child was treated like all their other children, and that they could, like all the children that they have, get married as well to the person that they loved. The positive change we brought to baby Ben. An amazing story. A baby born with different chromosomes. He is a person with Down syndrome. Unfortunately, his biological parents could not cope with his reality. A number of different sex couples, straight couples, rejected him from adoption, one after the other. But Ben was the first child to be adopted in Malta by same-sex parents. And today, this child is growing up into a beautiful boy who knows that, irrespective of the differences that he has, different chromosomes, he can live in a country that treats him the same as all other children, and he has all the opportunities, like all other children, to succeed. The positive change we brought to the 2% in our society who are intersex. When we legislated the Gender Identities, Gender Expression and Sexual Characteristics Act, there were questions, but what are intersex? Who are intersex people? There's no one. We know no one who's intersex. 2% of the population are intersex, and we stopped our medical institutions from giving them surgery without their consent and allowing them to decide their gender when they grow up. This is what we did in 2016. And I must mention one of my great friends, Joseph, who we brought a change to people who passed through something like he did when he was pushed towards conversion practices and the false religious hope that he could somehow become straight. There are so many funerals I went to when I was young. Of people that couldn't be who they are. Trans, gay, men who had a whole life in front of them. But unfortunately, it was cut short because of the hate. And today we will be marching for them. But as my colleague said from Malta, from the opposition party, the fight is not won yet. We have laws, we have very strong laws, but as we have seen even last week, there is still hate. As we have seen today, there is still hate, and we need to keep on working to opening minds and softening hearts. And as we will all be marching today for different reasons, mainly equality and love, as I said, I will be marching for those who are not with us and who couldn't enjoy the privileges that we have today and the rights that we have today, but I will also be marching for others and with them here in Malta. And I mention Shakib, Dali, Musa, and so many migrants, people who are fleeing persecution throughout the world, who came here to Malta in the hope of having equal rights, but unfortunately, till today, they are not given those equal rights as each and every one of us. And I hope that someday we'll see some of them in Parliament, as you have done in Belgium, representing those who live in the community, because we are all equal. I will also be marching for those in Ukraine, the unicorn soldiers, who are currently passing through maybe the worst time of their life, who cannot go out in their streets of Kiev, Kharkiv, or wherever they are, because of the threat that Russia is giving them, and the threat that Russia is giving each and every one of us here in the room, because the Russian war invasion on Ukraine isn't simply a war of missiles and bullets, but it is also a war of ideology, and they're trying to destroy all that we have built in the wonderful European Union we're part of, to try and dismantle our values, to try to dismantle our union, and to try and dismantle the love, equality, and belonging that we all have towards each other and towards all that we believe in. Thank you very much for coming here. And I need to thank Mr. Mallia, our friend Pierre, for all the patience that he had to take with in order to organize this. Thank you very much.
We have one last concluding remarks from Mr. Arnon Lefebvre, former Director of Human Rights, Copenhagen 2021. The floor is yours.
Thank you so much. So when people ask me why we started half an hour earlier, that's because all of you talk so much. And I think we know legislators by now. I'm not one of them. I'm the former director of Copenhagen 2021. I work now with both the Global Equality Caucus and Parliamentarians for Global Action, making sure you are included, because legislators do make a difference. It is important to not forget that you are there to support us, to help us, and to fight with us. But I also want to acknowledge all these people that are there. And I have to name some people that helped us a lot here with the parliamentary plenary, Cyrus's advisors, Mireia, Pia, and also David taking all these pictures. Also Andrew, who helped me a lot on the Global Equality Caucus site. I want to remind us of something. World Pride and Euro Pride is not a party. Yes, we celebrate, of course. But why are we here? We are here to ask for our rights. And there's something very important I want to mention. I'm also getting emotional about these kind of things, because we are here because we have a passport that makes us travel. We are here because we can. We have the finances. We have the opportunities. I've lived in different countries over the time of my life. Kazakhstan, Guyana, now in Argentina. People are skipping meals. People don't have a roof over their head. People can't be who they want to be. And I think I lived in places that were not the worst. I think it is really important for us to understand that for these people, we are here today. These are the people that can't be here with us because they don't have these means that we have. So I want us to remember who we are actually working for, those that cannot be here today. And I'm going to cut it very short now. I just want to also acknowledge something else. This is the third time this is being held, and I'm very hopeful we can do this in the future as well. Our colleagues from Madrid are here. Juan Carlos up there, together with Jose, organized the first one in Madrid, which was basically, the first World Pride that organized an interparliamentary plenary. So Juan Carlos, thank you so much for starting this. Copenhagen was the second one. We're here in Malta for the third one, and I'm looking forward to see where the fourth one is going to be. Different Euro Prides and World Prides will be happening, and we want this to be a sustainable event where all these legislators that are here are going to take action, because that is what we need. We need more than talking, we need action. Action from all of you and leadership in what you've been doing. So thank you so, so much for being here today. I'm hopeful that I will see you in the future again. Thank you for working with us, and thank you for marching with us later today. Thank you.
Thank you, Thank you very much. On behalf of Mr. Speaker, Dr. Angelo Farrugia, I would like to thank you once more for coming to the Maltese Parliament. This seat gives you not only the opportunity to talk, not only the opportunity to listen, but also the opportunity to see all of you giving your speeches and being passionate about what you believe in. Let's continue together to walk. Let's continue to march on together. And now I will invite you all for a group, a commemorative group photo. Please come near me so that together we will take this commemorative photo and end the session. Thank you very much.